This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Last week, the nation hit and surpassed a cap. Just over 50,000 refugees gained entry to the United States this year. That was the limit set by Donald Trump's executive order. Reaching the cap in no way meant reaching a conclusion. There's a lot of uncertainty and confusion with these ongoing shifts in law and policy. Refugee families living here in North Carolina feel the turbulence acutely. They're left fearful about their own fate and wondering if loved ones scheduled to join them will have the chance after all. Adam Clark is the director of World Relief Durham. That organization resettled about a quarter of the more than 1,200 refugees who arrived in the Triangle last year. Adam, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So where do we stand right now in terms of refugees that are supposed to be settled? And I guess we'll talk about World Relief, but perhaps we can extrapolate from that. Are there still people in the pipeline? What are you doing now as a relief agency?
Yeah. Well, since the executive orders in January, there's really been a lot of turmoil in not only the families that you mentioned and wondering when they'll be reunited, but the number of refugees that we'll be serving locally. So I think maybe four or five times the number of refugees that my office was scheduled to serve this year has changed since January. So I'm a little leery to give people an answer when they ask me how many we'll be serving. There are still families that we serve here locally. There are still a trickle coming through. And as some of the latest headlines have shown, there's some exceptions to this new iteration of the executive order.
The fact is that confusion is really what reigns at the moment, right?
That's pretty much correct, yeah. The cap of refugees that were allowed in the United States again this year dropped from 110,000 to 50,000. We're actually now over the 50,000 cap just because of some of these exceptions. Folks can still come through if they have close family that they're joining or if they have a bona fide relationship to a U.S. entity. The confusion that's reigning is really about who qualifies under these exceptions. The State Department's definitely still deliberating on who exactly will qualify. But for now, we're able to rebook some of the folks that had previously been banned, and we hope to see some of them this summer.
So when you say rebooked, by the time a name or a family comes to you, what's the process like for you at that point?
Mm-hmm. Typically, we would receive word maybe 3 to 4 weeks ahead of time that a family of, say, four from Myanmar or wherever is going to be coming through on such and such a date. And that's when our case managers and our volunteers start to prepare a home for them and begin to prepare services. So,
and do they have connections in this area already? Is that why they've come to you?
About half of the refugees World Relief serves nationwide have either family or friends that they're rejoining. So that's usually the case that in a given month we're reuniting some families.
And what are you hearing from the families of people who have already been resettled here? Mm-hmm. I understand that this is causing a great deal of turbulence for them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking of specifically there's a family here, a sister here who's been separated from her sister overseas. They're a Rohingya family, so the Rohingya are really highly persecuted ethnic and religious minority Muslim group in Myanmar. And, they've been killed by the hundreds, a lot of human rights violations. It's a pretty ugly situation. The sister here is here with her child and husband. And the sister overseas has a husband and two children under 5 years old. They are still in harm's way, still in a camp, not exactly a safe place to be. And that the family overseas was supposed to come here in May. So we were supposed to be able to reunite them because of the 50,000 cap, because of the executive order and kind of the weekly limits on how many refugees are allowed in. Those flights in May were canceled. So, of course, the sister here that we're serving came to us in tears and said, when am I going to see my sister, or my niece and nephew? Are they coming at all? And really, we can't answer that question definitively. We can say that we hope they'll be rebooked and we think they will be. In August, I think. But right now, with the rate at which things are changing, I really don't feel safe telling her that, that she will see them again.
And, of course, that's a long process for her. I mean, even hearing that May was the date represents months, if not longer, of communication back and forth and uncertainty about whether and where and how. Finally, you get a date, and, of course, now it's all upended.
Yep.
What about the families that are here? I understand that they, too, now feel insecure, that they're perhaps their status is still in question, right?
Yeah, one of the unfortunate consequences of some of the executive orders as well have been just to create an atmosphere of fear and confusion for the refugees already here. Unfortunately, some people even in the Triangle here have taken advantage of that atmosphere. A few months ago, we got some clients coming to us terrified. They had received a call from someone who said that they were from the U.S. government. Who asked them to pay a certain amount of money or they would be deported. It was a scam, but our clients didn't know that.
And they were using this atmosphere of fear and confusion created by these executive orders and turmoil
correct.
In just Washington.
Just to prey on refugees. Yeah. And it's really unfortunate. I mean, they've been through enough to get here. They've waited for years. They've been persecuted where they're fleeing from. And to be taken advantage of in that way is terrible. So
they also, there's, and questions too about confusion, which I think is always in the refugee and the resettlement community, something that you grapple with all the time, making a distinction between immigrants and refugees. And I wonder if that's getting any more confused these days and creates more problems for refugee families.
Yeah, it is. It's one of the first points I usually make anywhere I speak in the area is I talk about a pie chart. If you were to look at a pie chart of the immigrants coming in the U.S. every year, even those who are documented, the number that refugees represent is so small it would be maybe 6% of that pie would be refugees. So we're definitely talking about a very small group of people, humanitarian immigrants coming through the State Department for humanitarian reasons, but those terms, immigrant, refugee, they've just been blended. And even there's a lot of clarity that needs to be added to how the resettlement program is different here in the U.S. than, say, in Europe, where you see boatloads of people washing ashore in panic. That is not how resettlement works here.
What is the difference? What is the difference here?
Yeah. Well, it's highly organized and takes years. So the State Department, for example, processes people overseas. They do not wash ashore and are then processed here in any way. The refugees that we're talking about are processed in State Department-run processing centers in 9 different ones all over the globe. And after roughly the 2-year process of determining that they're safe and that they've been vetted, then they can enter the country.
And there are protections also given to refugees. First of all, you can talk about how you gain refugee status, what that takes. And it talks about persecution and a serious threat to you in your homeland. Yeah. And then the fact that there are international agreements to which the U.S. is a signatory that guarantees the rights of these persecuted people. Maybe you can offer that distinction for us and describe that for us.
Yeah, the United Nations is the one giving us the definition of what qualifies as a refugee coming out of their convention in the 50s. And the I think one of the most important things that came out of that convention, I think it was 51, was that the principle of non-refoulement, which is basically that international law that says you cannot send a refugee back into harm's way. You can't send them back to where they came from, where they fled from, and you can't send them to another country where they would be persecuted or in harm's way. So that's something that we've had to remind our clients about a lot lately.
What has this meant for you as an organization now with all of this uncertainty? You have you have a certain amount of infrastructure that you have to keep, and I wonder what it's meant for you as an agency.
Yeah, well, World Relief, like the other 8 agencies that contract with the State Department, have gone through extreme turmoil since January. I don't remember there ever being a previous year where the number of refugees we served changed in the middle of the year. We're already sort of undergoing more change than most organizations are used to. We resize ourselves as an entire network every year based on the presidential determination. But at the beginning of this fiscal year, we were told to become a network that could serve 110,000 people. And when that number has dropped to 50,000 suddenly, all the agencies across the U.S., including World Relief, had to make some pretty tough decisions. There were hundreds of layoffs. And World Relief itself had to close, was forced to close five offices.
Meanwhile, you've got probably, because remember, you've got the President of the United States now cutting in half the number of refugees we'll receive, even as the number of refugees worldwide climbs to record proportions.
Yep.
You've got this imbalance that you have to deal with and cope with. Mm-hmm. You're having to cut back because they've cut back. But I would guess the number of volunteers you have, the number of people that want to help you, is growing. Right?
Exactly. It's ironic, and it's a really difficult position to be in. It's a good problem to have. Actually, the Triangle area is really distinctive. World Relief Network has, you know, thousands of churches that work with us nationwide. But here in the Triangle, last year I think we had 700 volunteers to serve just about 300 refugees. Mm-hmm. So it's fantastic. Now our number is under 200 refugees that we're going to get this year, but we've got even more interest in the volunteers.
You've got to keep them interested when there's less work, sadly.
It's tough.
Yeah,
it's tough. There are still things to do, and there are thousands of refugees still here in the area that continue to need friendship, that continue to need help and assistance and guidance and help to integrate in a healthy way.
Well, I want to thank you very much for your work and for talking with us. Adam Clark, Director of World Relief Durham. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Coming up, we're going to talk about a new book that looks at International Women's Year in 1975 and a conference that changed feminist politics. We'll talk about that on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.